Hello and welcome back to the Single Girl's Guide to Life, your weekly guide to single life living in your 20s, 30s and 40s. I'm Chantel Dyson, a love and life coach, helping you to break your patterns in dating to help you date the right guys when you are ready to, so long as you already have that confidence in being on your own already. This week we're delving into a topic that I don't think gets spoken about enough, and if it's anything like I experienced when I read the page that first set this idea off and was like, oh my God, you're joking. Literally, on the page of the book that I'm going to refer to, I've written an insane page in writing, because I write all over my books. Thoughts that I'm having, connections I'm making to other things, to my own life. But this kind of blew my mind, because to me, there was a lot of information that suggested that it came from somewhere else, that it came from our childhood, and it was to do with our upbringing that led us to be a particular way. And that thing that I'm talking about is attachment styles, a favourite topic of mine, and one that we talk about because predominantly I work with people of all attachment styles, but I often can speak very specifically and understand specifically the anxious attachment style, because I have that attachment style for whatever reason. And you will never know quite what caused your insecure attachment style. You can make some good guesses. You can look at the patterns and the upbringing and the past experiences you've had that allow you to decide where your attachment style comes from. I've previously done episodes on attachment style. I'll put them in the description in case you want the basics of what is she talking about? What are attachment styles? I'll do a very quick brief overview, but to get the detail, I will link other episodes that you might want to listen to first. But in brief, there are four different attachment styles: secure, anxious, avoidant, and fearful avoidant. Secure, 50% of the population. Anxious and avoidant is 20-25% of each, and the remaining 5% then belongs to fearful avoidant, which is essentially an insecure type, which is a mixture of anxious and avoidant. Anxious and avoidant being examples also of insecure attachment styles. Now, these are not problems with you. They're just different ways that your brain responds, that your body reacts to intimate relationships when you are dealing with romantic scenarios. And it then determines the way that you show up in a relationship. And it can cause you some issues sometimes. It can mean that you push too far sometimes to get connection from someone if you've got an anxious attachment style, or you can close off too quickly with an avoidant, or a bit of both if you're in the fearful avoidant section. That said, we've also got those that are secure, those that find it easier to achieve those things. Of course, it's a bit of a spectrum. You can be secure here, but something makes you become slightly more anxious. Maybe something's happened that makes you worry a bit more. You're concerned and you need more reassurance. Or the other way, someone's being too much and pushes away. And I have experienced some differences in how I react, whether we'd call it the actual attachment style or not. But in dating, if someone that I'm just warming up to is like, oh my God, I can't wait to meet you, and the energy is not matched, that can be demonstrated or look like avoidance, because I was like, no, this is too much. I'm shutting down. I'm not replying to you. You're messaging me and I don't really want to. And that's just a vibe. I don't think that is an attachment style, but you might notice the difference in behavior in just how you can change sometimes based on that. Whereas I know predominantly when I'm really dealing with an intimate scenario, I am on that anxious side. I would like more connection and reassurance than not. During conflict, that's the one that comes up the most. So when you are having an argument, what do you do? Do you try and get space, or do you try and keep talking to that person? I'm a try and keep talking and work this out right now kind of person. So go check those out if you need to work out where you're at. Have a look at online quizzes. There are a couple you can do, such as What's My Attachment Style? Google that and you'll find quizzes that will help you work that out. But for anyone that has some knowledge of this and maybe has even read the book Attached, which is yet again the book that I am referring back to, I've spoken about it 100 times. It is the book to start with for attachment styles. It doesn't cover everything going forwards. It mentions this briefly on a couple of pages, but it is a good starting point if you're wanting to learn about your attachment style. And as I say, this page that came out to me was the mention of the fact that your attachment style doesn't just come from your upbringing. Online, we see all of this stuff about childhood trauma and your parents being unavailable when you were being raised. And that's why you fall more firmly into an insecure attachment style, that your parents left you to get on with it and you became independent, or they just didn't emotionally validate you, for example. But I reckon there's some of you listening that know that you have or have a tendency towards these anxious attachment styles or avoidant attachment styles, yet you go, but my upbringing was actually okay. Maybe, you know, mum, dad could have been there a bit more in that sense, but, you know, it wasn't actually bad. And generally, you know, they did hug me when I cried and they weren't smothering me too much. I wasn't trying to escape them and get my independence. It was okay. So why do I have these tendencies towards panic and fear and worrying about people? Or why do I shut down when someone gets close to me? Why do I not let people in? And that's because our childhood upbringing and our early childhood experiences are not the only reason for our development of an insecure attachment style. And that is exactly what Attached the book mentions, which is that the research that they looked into and that they mention actually says that our adult relationships are as powerful at having an impact on our attachment style as we go through than it is just our childhood experiences. And if that doesn't make your mind go boom in some ways, then you're like, oh my God, it's nothing to do with when I was a child necessarily. Or there might have been little parts that factored in, but why I'm so strong in this insecure attachment might not be because my parents were or weren't there, but actually it's because of something someone did in a previous relationship I was in, the way they treated me, what happened. And no wonder I won't let anyone come in and get close anymore. Or no wonder I stress every time someone I date doesn't reply back efficiently when they're on a night out. Because something negative happened in your adult relationships. And this doesn't just go with purely the adult experiences you've had. There are more things that can feed into what can impact our attachment style. So I want you to understand that childhood experiences are a big thing. They can lead to it. And for me, I can see things both in my own childhood, in other situations and dynamics between parents and children. I can see why some children are the way they are in terms of attachment. And I don't mean children as in young people. I mean just someone being a parent and someone being the child of someone else. They're both adults. And then the way they show up in dating, I see it and hear it in my clients. So that is a big thing. And it's nice to be able to look back and go, oh, this isn't actually a me thing. This is something that happened to me and it's something that I have to deal with. There's also genetic predisposition to it as well, loosely, but there are more than just your childhood experiences, something that's so far away. Now, you still can't change all the things that have given you the impression of an attachment style and what you feel it is, because some things are ingrained and these have been going on for a long time. Just because I'm going to give you different options doesn't mean there's a lot to do about it, but it might help you settle the story in your mind as to where your attachment style comes from. Then you can process it, then you can release it, and you can accept that it's part of you and you're going to learn to manage. But also know that your attachment style can change. In the way that you could have been secure growing up because you had that family unit that was secure and supportive, and then you had a terrible experience with someone at uni in your early 20s, in some sort of experience that set you back. And now you're worried every time you try and date someone. It gives you that certainty of what's happened and that it's not you, it's what's happened to you. And we just need to treat ourselves kindly in that instance and give ourselves time to process it and move through. Now, I've already mentioned adult experiences. And when I'm talking about that, what I'm really talking about in particular is when someone betrays your trust in a relationship. It can be as small as texting someone else, which we should treat seriously, but it can be a full-blown cheating scenario, an affair, but something that betrays the trust. Even just someone not really being there for you and being consistent can be enough. You know, someone that didn't show up for you, didn't really have your back, and you accepted it because you thought it was what a relationship should be and it's just that person. But at some point you realize that you had been letting yourself down, and there's almost this self-guilt about, I should have known that I should have expected more from that person, and I shouldn't have just accepted when they blew up at me and reacted so wildly, but I accepted that. And these are the adult experiences. But there are other traumatic events in our lives that can take place that also impact our attachment style. Now, more often than not, traumatic experiences are easier to come about when we're a child, because with adults and children, there's a power dynamic to understand. And so the idea of neglect or abuse in some way is possible to be there. But an adverse childhood experience can be the divorce of your parents. So it wasn't even that they might have been unemotionally available. Just your parents divorcing can have an impact on you. And that isn't just for when you are a child under 16, but your parents' divorce can have an effect on you even when you go into adulthood. Sometimes that's even harder to comprehend because you never saw that really coming, being an adult and your parents separating. Any kind of trauma presents some level of unsafety to us in a particular way. And what it can lead to is a sense of feeling like you need to control everything and being super hypervigilant to threats of what's going on around you. And it sounds like this would tend towards an anxious attachment style. I know in dating that I am hypervigilant to the smallest mention of something being off. And I've mentioned it before, and it was someone that I'd heard describe it as a smoke alarm that is just too sensitive. Like it literally, as the toast is in the toaster, it's not even burning, it's going off. Because it's noticed something that in previous instances might have suggested that someone was pulling away, that was going to abandon me. And rather than let it play out and risk getting hurt, I would be hypervigilant to it so I could stop it, get out of it, and not let anything get to me. But the problem was, is that sometimes in doing that, in trying to control the situation, you would push people away. You would be trying to hold on to them and try and get clarification and reassurance. But because of that intensity, pushed people away. Now, it's not right to demonize yourself over that, but it's understanding that maybe the divorce of my parents was that experience. I was very upset about my parents' divorce, and I know I didn't process it when I was a child. I've definitely processed that more as an adult specifically. There were a lot of tears when I was younger, and they didn't really get dealt with. And I can only imagine what that meant for me not understanding why my dad was moving out, or really talking about how I felt about my dad moving out, to then have that whole classic daddy issues idea of thinking that someone's going to leave at any given moment, particularly males that I have a close relationship with. That's a no-brainer as to that possibly having an influence on why I'm literally reading into things, seeing things that might not even be there, but I'm hypervigilant to it. So too, maybe I was, on reflection, talking this out loud, maybe I used to be more fearful, avoidant. Maybe I had a mix of both, because sometimes it can also mean that we emotionally numb ourselves. And I've previously spoken on episodes about how I didn't really feel as many things in my teen years, in my early 20s. I was very detached in that sense. And when things happened, I would quickly brush them under the carpet to leave them. And I wouldn't want to feel bad for particularly long. Whereas if you've listened to the podcast, you will know at times I have mentioned how much I cry and release things. Now, I can spend full days crying and I'll be red in the face. I don't even care. Sometimes I need to get that out because I've learned that it's not great to hold on to it. But in those instances, it suggests that something happened as a safety measure to numb that feeling and get rid of it. And it was some sort of trauma. Maybe go back to your teenage years when you're first becoming interested in other people and if you're attracted to them or not. And just think about the experiences of some of the rejection that you have, how you might not get picked or invited to prom, say, that was a tradition for when you were at school, or if you were bold enough to ask someone out and got rejected. I was one of those people. I was bold enough to be a girl and ask someone out. Whilst I don't think I read into that rejection, I mean, I guess, I think if I'm honest and I think back to right then, I think I was upset. Now, it feels like nothing now, of course. But that can still, whilst it's not the most significant trauma piece, that's still difficult to process. And we have this tradition of the men asking the women out in heterosexual relationships, especially at that age. It is put on the boys a lot more. And some say that the boys get good at it. They get used to it because they're used to asking the girls and getting rejected. Like that there's a high probability that people are going to say no, but they do it. They get back on the horse and they keep going. Well, what if that consistent rejection is the reason that they close off? Because all those little rejections over time add up, and we wouldn't call that traumatic per se. We wouldn't say that was about their childhood upbringing. That's just the experiences of themselves putting themselves out there, but literally having no positive reassurance that someone would just like to try and date them. And they have to process those rejections over and over. And potentially that's why they close off. And it can be the reverse if we assume those heterosexual roles, that the girl that never gets asked thinks, well, no one's asking me, like, I don't belong anywhere. And so when they do have the opportunity of someone coming along, they hold on to it and don't want it to go anywhere at all. Whereas the boys are just protecting themselves in terms of getting hurt. It isn't always really, really big things, but it can be all of these little things that add up, and these experiences that shape the way we see relationships, that shape the way we feel about ourselves, and in turn, our natural instincts shift into keeping us safe, which sometimes means emotionally cutting off. It means trying to be hypervigilant to prevent threat, and thus eventually having unhealthy relationships in our lives. Now, I previously also mentioned that there's genetic dispositions to the attachment styles, but there's also these elements of fear being generational, that it can be moved through biologically. And there was a study that I was reading that was referred to in It Didn't Start With You by Mark Wallin. So there was one study where they predisposed mice to not like a particular smell. When they were exposed to this smell, they were shocked. So they were given this fear of this smell, to the point at which they could actually detect it even when it wasn't as strong a smell. They were hypervigilant to the smell of this odour. Now, it's the bit that they mention after this that's interesting, which is that both the pups of those mice and then the subsequent grandpups to those mice as well also had the predisposition of fear to this odour. They would become jumpy and avoided it, is what it says here, whenever they smelt it, but they had never experienced it themselves before. And there are lots of studies going on in terms of epigenetics and what gets passed through. But this makes sense in terms of abandonment. For example, in my own instance, we have some historical abandonment points in both my mother's and my grandmother's lives in terms of my mother's father. So you've got that idea of my mum never experiencing that directly, but would have in the womb. And I am a tiny little cell within her being in the womb of my grandmother. So whatever my grandmother experienced, but also my mum during early childhood in not having a father figure there for a number of years, would also probably predisposition me to again be concerned about there not being someone around, the fear of abandonment. And then you add in the divorce of my parents and my dad living in a separate house to us. I think I must be textbook. That first bit of my grandmother and my mother's experiences are not first-hand experiences. They're not adverse childhood experiences for me. I maybe was even predispositioned before my parents separated. Maybe I was always going to have that genetic pull there. And maybe the divorce doubled down on that. And then as I started to date people and maybe subconsciously chose those that were more avoidant, not into me, etc., maybe it pulled it out. It triggered it. And it would be worth thinking back a generation or two. And it does not have to follow like maternal paternal lines. It can go either way. It can even sort of move across sometimes from uncles and aunts as well. But it might even be worth understanding if there are elements in your past that might have been passed through genetics. And whilst they don't necessarily mean that that's going to happen, the same way that if you go through trauma, it doesn't mean that you are going to have an insecure attachment style. The same way that having a genetic predisposition to it doesn't mean you're going to display in that way. But it can mean that should you experience particular adult experiences, then you are going to, then there's a likelihood it could be drawn out and brought out. And that then leads you to experience an insecure attachment style. And you've got to work to get it back. But you can bring it back. Please remember that our attachment styles can change. Attached really talks about finding someone to become secure with, because attachment is all based on dependence. Looking for someone to depend on. And we do put a big onus on doing that with one romantic partner at a time. However, I defy that and say you do not need that. You can learn to depend on couple of different people that can be there for you in your life, and it does not have to be the long-term relationship of your life, because that's so high stakes. I was describing it earlier to a client that was on a dating game plan call, 15 minutes. We were talking about how to fulfill this feeling of loneliness in her. And she initially came to the chat because she wanted to talk about dating, but it turned out we were going to look at that loneliness and the feeling that was within it. And I said, well, let's look at your friends as well, because if you're trying to look for one person to fill that, and that's the feeling you have right now, you're looking for a mortgage on a house. Whereas friends, whilst they may not be there for as long because they're more like a rental, you've got more opportunity to find them. And that came up with another client where we were thrashing out that model. It wasn't quite that context, but it was this whole idea of romantic relationships mostly are big investment and a long-term commitment is what you're intending. Whereas friendships, whilst we still might want them to be long-term, they have more susceptibility to end naturally, to come to an end after a year or two because of life circumstances changing. It is a rental. But we're here right now. We'll enjoy our time together. Let's just do this. Let's have fun. And if, you know, in a year's time, I go and work somewhere different, if I have a family, it's going to change. Situation's going to change. Whereas trying to solve your loneliness and find someone through a mortgage, proposal in that way, much harder. So that dependency can go wider. It can go into your friends. It doesn't have to be just this one person, which they're hard to find out there, to find the right person at the right time with all the right things that come together to make you guys compatible. Because I spoke about compatibility in episode 89. And you can go and check that out if you want to listen in to what those checks are. So much harder. Now, the last thing is something that is to do with your beliefs. And in our culture, in the UK, and this probably quite Western world, the assumption, the expectation is to have one person to rely on. And it's not really spoken about enough to have your independence, to balance a mixture of independence. It's very much focused on nuclear families, which also doesn't really base itself on connection and actually having support networks when you're having children. If I ever decide to have them, there is no way I'm falling into the trap of just it being me, my partner, and a child. That no way. Absolutely not. Because I'm not, that's not it. That's not the way to do it. And apart from which, even though I know the role of mum would be like a full-time role in theory, there ain't any way you are getting me to lose all of my independence for a child. There would need to be a plan of how do we still maintain independence whilst we become parents? How do we still get time with each other on our own whilst raising a child? But I don't think that's the way society sells it. I don't see the support in our processes. I know there's some new things coming in to help with childcare and stuff like that, but is that just a ploy to get women back to work quicker? I don't know. But it's this whole idea around what relationships should be, and that is going to not be determined by your childhood upbringing, but you're going to get an impression of that through the parenting that you experience and the way your parents treated you, but also the way that they treated one another. And all the other relationships that you see around you, your grandparents, aunts and uncles, friends of the family. And two, you're also going to see it through what we see on television. And I teach this stuff, the very early stuff, to children. And you would be surprised as to how many of them at 14, 15 already have these styles coming out because they do believe it's right to message someone at multiple times when they're not answering them. And I don't mean because of a conflict. I just mean in general. They don't believe that someone should be allowed to have friends and go out and enjoy themselves because they're worried that something's going to happen. And that is an anxious attachment style coming out right there and then. Some level of controlling behaviour too, to some degree. And these children aren't doing this intentionally. This is just the way that they're trying to feel safe, and they're new to it. They are going to do things that are not necessarily healthy because it's the only way they know how to cope. Their friends are probably doing it too. And at that kind of juvenile age, you are doing stuff that isn't necessarily right and healthy. You're just trying to keep safe whilst you're dealing with learning how to manage intimate relationships. We've got all of the background of boys shouldn't really show emotion. So naturally, we have this skew in the avoidant category towards boys being more avoidant because they're never encouraged to talk out about how they feel. And then you've got the girls who will talk about how they feel, which is fantastic, but then it's because of the way that they have these groups that chat about it, then you hear the worry from other people. And it's why with some of my videos on YouTube, for example, or certain videos that I put on social media, they will be very personal about my life, but they're always delayed because there's no way I'm putting out things that are vulnerable that you or anybody else can comment on and tell me I did wrong or I'm going to do something wrong in that moment. I don't need 6,000 other opinions telling me what's a good idea or not, because what's going to happen? I'm going to doubt myself. And sometimes whilst females are predominantly much better at sharing their experiences, sometimes that's not to our benefit. Sometimes that it brings on the idea of like too many chefs spoil the broth, even though people aren't meant to be touching the broth. Suddenly, because I've told a story, they now get themselves involved in my broth. And that means we doubt ourselves, we worry, and someone's put a little seedling of doubt in our mind. Oh God, do you think he's seeing someone else? Oh, well, you've got to watch out for that, because if he starts doing that, he might leave you. Oh, you weren't even worried about it. And your friends, family, whoever it is, they don't mean harm by it, but it has caused you an issue now. And they're just trying, because something bad has happened to them and they've got an anxious attachment style and they've had a negative experience that they're bringing to you. You were fine. You were not worrying about it until someone said it. And now you're worried. And again, I think there's that tendency there. One of the potential reasons that's theorized, I've not got any proof of that. That's me thinking out loud of why sometimes women might skew that way. And we're generally more neurotic. It means we have a predisposition towards pessimism, negativity. I personally don't. I am an optimist. I don't know if you can already tell, but we have that. So naturally we're worriers because there's more of an historical, going all the way back, threat to our lives and we need people to protect us. So of course we're more anxious and the fear of abandonment comes up for us more so than it would to be stoic and to turn off and to not engage with emotions because we feel it. We do. We experience that more naturally. We don't have to really access that so much, though some of us might have shut off as a safety measure. All of these things mean that it is not just our individual childhood experiences and upbringing that determine it. You've got the extremes of trauma. You've got the predisposition in genetics. You've got your adult experiences, the intimate parts of a relationship where trust is broken that throws you off. You don't want to date again and you certainly don't want anyone close or living with you ever again. And we've got these expectations in society that you should just be with one person. They should be your everything. But men should hold the fort and not be emotional. And women are going to be worried about someone running away. All of these things can contribute to your attachment style as you are now. And you look back and go, well, there's nothing in my childhood. Well, see if there's something. See if there's generational trauma. See if there are little things that would have influenced the way that you see and perceive relationships and how independent you should or shouldn't be in a relationship and how dependent you should be. What you've seen, whether it's on TV, through your friends and family. And just take stock. Has there been any experience that would have had a negative impact on you that might have shifted you into insecure? And in the same way, when you find the right person to date, you will move over time, if you can grow and communicate, back towards a more secure attachment style because you will learn to depend on that person. But you can do some of that beforehand with friends, but there is another level to it when you get to a friendship. There's a bit that you can't access until you're in that intimate relationship. You can emulate it. There's someone that mentioned that you could do the same in therapy. I have not experienced that, but just that closeness and dependency, I think you could probably establish in that same way. If you can be vulnerable, often it's someone that we're looking for connection, not just company, but that deep connection. And if that's part that helps you process it, it's worth considering therapy. Some people have achieved it through that and processed. There is this level, though, that gets tested in a relationship. But if you're at any stage of this, if you need to work out what your attachment style is, if you know your attachment style but just don't know how to overcome it and deal with it, if you're trying to look for what happened in your past that's led you to be the way you are and you need to start making a game plan, then I am offering 15-minute free dating game plan sessions. They say dating, this all is part of dating. This is all part of discovering you, making sure you know your strengths and weaknesses in dating. And actually touch yourself, I'm going to be needy at times. I need to accept that, but there's a balance to be had. It cannot be turned up to 100 all the time. There's a balance of what's going on, and I need to learn to communicate effectively. And in that 15 minutes, it's short, but we will get to one actionable thing that you can start doing, exploring, trying in dating that will allow you to find the right people, that to start dating people that are not going to superbly trigger an attachment style coming out, but support you to create and move towards a secure attachment style. All the details to book one of those calls will be in the description. Until next time, everybody, keep celebrating single life together.